about that.
Love fur. It's in. It's natural. And it's nature. And it's warm.
Do you have any idea what kind of animal that is?
I don't. Maybe coyote? Like coyote.
Yeah. Really? It's certainly isn't needed to keep us warm anymore. And if people only knew how it comes to become a coat, I'm sure they wouldn't buy anything with fur on it.
Welcome to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio CFRO in the downtown east side on unceded Coast Salish territories, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, December 13th, Friday the 13th. I am Jackie and I'm joined here in studio today by Alyssa.
Hi.
Jenny.
Hello.
And Tim.
Hi there.
Welcome. Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and compassionate living radio program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep you up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which non-humans, animals, are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. This program can be heard every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and is also streamed live at coopradio.org and available as podcasts on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. So today is our fur show. We will speak with Leslie Fox of the Association for the Protection of Fur-Bearing Animals, or Fur Bear Defenders. Fur Bear Defenders has been working since 1944 to abolish the commercial fur trade. They currently work on public education and outreach, along with wildlife protection initiatives, and we will speak with her about their current campaigns, Canada Goose's fur policy, and wildlife protection. Also, yesterday, Alyssa and I hit the streets and asked the public for their thoughts on fur. Their responses may surprise you, and listen in later in the show, and we'll be asking our listeners to call in. Got an opinion about fur for fashion? Call us at 604-684-7561 when we announce it later in the show. So we have a great show for you today, so please stay tuned.
So I've got some also newsworthy things to talk about. I know fur is a big topic in the media these days, and I myself was in the media recently, so I just wanted to reflect on that experience a little bit. In case you're not aware, I am a university student. I go to Simon Fraser University, and although my degree is in interactive arts and technology, I actually have found that I've studied quite a bit about animal rights during my time at university. I recently made what I like to call an unofficial transcript of my studies at university, and I wrote down not only what courses I've taken, but what I actually studied and wrote about for my papers and learned about for my projects and all the classes I've taken. And I found that in over 10 courses, I studied animal rights. That's more than enough credits to be a minor, so I thought that was pretty noteworthy. Everything in courses from cognitive science to sound design, I've been looking at animal issues during my time at SFU. So recently, for a course I was taking on political communication, we had to write an op-ed. That's an opinion editorial that we had to submit to a newspaper for marks. So for mine, I wrote a paper called Sexual Assault for Breakfast, which was also published under the name Rape for Breakfast by the Georgia Strait and also The Peak in print format. So it's available online at the Georgia Strait website and The Peak SFU newspaper publication in print form. But I got a lot of interesting responses to the article, and it was a really interesting experience. I'd never had an op-ed published before, and I got a lot of comments back to me, both positive and negative. So it was really interesting to kind of look at that and see how people view animals kind of in a university educational setting. It was interesting, too, because I attended a lecture recently where someone, a visiting professor from France, was talking about what she liked to call kind of active consumerism or ethical consumerism, and there was no mention of veganism in her presentation at all. So I've been finding it interesting to notice how little is known, even in an academic setting, about animal rights and how that perspective isn't always acknowledged in the mainstream. But in response to my article, a lot of people were really shocked that I was comparing animals to people in terms of how they're treated, because, in case you aren't aware, cows are artificially inseminated to produce milk that humans consume, which is also turned into cheese and other dairy products. So a lot of people were really shocked that I was making that comparison and really offended by the notion that animal suffering would equate to human suffering. And I thought that was a really interesting response that I received. But it was interesting, too, because my professor sent me some feedback back. And from one of the teaching staff, I received some comments that I should have, in my article, looked at alternatives to how they could produce milk in a more humane way, I guess was their comment. Because in my article, I suggested that people choose perhaps non-dairy milks or other types of products instead of using dairy milk. But they were really set on this idea that I should be trying to find a more humane solution, which I think really kind of defeats the purpose of animal rights and trying not to use animals to begin with. So that was pretty interesting.
So people are assuming that you're talking only about the worst farms that do this and the nice ones don't do this or something?
I'm not sure that's really so much the thing. It's hard to tell, right, because there's so many different comments. I mean, there's comments on the article page on the internet, which I read some of and actually found quite amusing. But I also got a fair amount of personal private messages and emails from people I both knew and did not know that happened to find me somehow, which was quite the experience. But I think most people seem to not debate the fact that these things happen, and they weren't really so much shocked that they occurred, but rather were shocked with my treatment of it and the fact that I was comparing it to human suffering or saying that it was a bad thing at all instead of just accepting it as a fact of how the world works. Mm. So that was pretty surprising to me.
So the fact that you just spoke kind of bluntly about this issue, I guess maybe some people found that offensive, but it's the truth. Like, how else can you phrase it? You're gonna sugarcoat it.
I think there's a problem with or it's problematic to use the word rape, I think, because while people who, human people who have experienced that and all the emotional weight of that is super heavy. So to describe artificial insemination being the same as human rape, I think I can see people how people have take issue with that.
It was interesting, too, because even a lot of vegans disagreed with my treatment of that. But I was following a certain assignment criteria that we had to meet for how we had to write our paper. And there were certain ways they wanted us to write about issues in order for them to get published. Mm-hmm. Because it's not just writing about an issue, it's making it newsworthy. So a newspaper will actually want to publish it, right? But I actually, like myself and a fair amount of other sexual assault survivors, have kind of come out in discussing this kind of in my personal networks and sort of talking about their own experiences. And many people don't think that it's unfair to compare those two things because they're like, I think the suffering of animals is very comparable to humans, and I don't know what emotional feelings a cow has in relation to that procedure, but I'm pretty sure it's not something, well, I know it's not something they're consenting to. They're not saying, here, please stick your arm into me with your insemination rod and like, please do this to me, and I am happily consenting to this procedure. So I don't think the cows are a willing yes, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. Right?
Definitely related to the sexual politics of meat, an outstanding book by Carol J. Adams, at which obviously angered a lot of people, that kind of language. Like, so I'm just kind of saying how I can kind of understand how people don't get that, especially who aren't vegan or haven't thought about it before.
People that haven't thought of it that way, it can be, of course, insulting to them. But you said, a lot of vegan animal rights people totally supported you and understood where you were coming from.
It's interesting to note, though, that I didn't title my article as having the word rape in it, but one of the publications that published it changed it to be more newsworthy that way or more shocking to people.
Yeah.
So
I'd be interested to talk to you or to maybe post something maybe on our website or something about how to get an op-ed published, those kind of tips and stuff. That would be helpful, I think.
Yeah, great. If you agree or disagree, you should write your own article and submit it to your local publication and get the word out.
Great. Thanks so much for sharing, Jenny.
Check out Think Indian every Monday at 8 to 9 p.m. Think Indian is Van City's Aboriginal pop culture show, featuring special guests, sharing community events, and playing a diverse range of musical genres, from hip-hop, country, rock, blues, contemporary, and traditional. Think Indian every Monday at 8 to 9 p.m. on Vancouver's Co-op Radio and heard online at www.coopradio.org.
To Welcome back to Animal Voices here on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. I've got some events for you now. Coming up very soon, Peace Not Violence Day of Action is happening tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. at the Chipotle on 818 Howe Street. Basically, this event is part of an international movement that's happening in 11 cities around the world. They've done two previous events, including Killing is No Kindness and Someone Not Something. This is part of the DXE Day of Action advocacy events that are happening. So basically, they're choosing to target Chipotle because they are kind of perpetuating this humane meat myth that we can kill animals in a kind way, when really they're promoting violence and what is a nightmarish reality for a lot of creatures. So you can join them at the Chipotle on Howe Street at 1:30 p.m. tomorrow if you want to be part of that Day of Action. Also, Liberation BC is presenting holiday turkey leafleting at the Canada Line SkyTrain station. That's going to happen on Monday, December 16th, and Tuesday, December 17th. So you can keep yourself on Santa's nice list by joining your fellow activists in some friendly vegan outreach. They're going to hand out copies of their talking turkey leaflet to commuters during rush hour between 4 and 6 p.m. on both those days. So just bring yourself and participate in that action. We also have a more calming event. Support Circle Number 4, organized by our very own Alyssa and Jackie, is happening on Tuesday at Eternal Abundance at 6:30 p.m. The theme for this one is Winter Times, Holidays, and Family Interactions. So the Support Circle will be talking about winter family get-togethers and celebrations that are taking place and discussing the challenges that vegans face during experiences like that. How do you remain peaceful and joyous as the ones you love are stick up for your deepest beliefs when other people may be in contradiction to that? So it should be a great evening on Tuesday at Eternal Abundance. We also, of course, have some ongoing events that happen weekly. There are the chicken vigils that happen every Friday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. at the intersection of Commercial Drive and Hastings Street outside of the storage facility and slaughterhouse. This is organized by Liberation BC, and you can contact Mary-Chris at liberationbc.org if you have more questions. But it's really great if you can bring out some numbers and raise more attention to these travesties that are occurring. Also, two more weekly events. We have the Brooklyn Clothing Fur Demos, very related to today's show. You can join the Vancouver Animal Defense League at Brooklyn Clothing to go fur free. The store sells fur trim of coyotes and raccoons who have been really abused and killed. So you can show up every Wednesday and Saturday. Tomorrow it's going to be from 11 to 1 p.m. They meet at the Blends Coffee Shop at 508 Davie and then walk as a group to Brooklyn Clothing Co. Or if you drive by there, you can see them. I happened to be passing by there a couple weeks ago just on an errand, and I saw them and I honked, so it's pretty cool. They're pretty easy to spot. You can also join the Vancouver Animal Defense League at Fantastic Friday Nights. This Friday, they are at Sun Chu Hua Restaurant, located at Main and East 23rd in Vancouver. They'll be there from 6:30 to 8:30, protesting against the shark fin soup served at this restaurant and trying to encourage this restaurant to serve more compassionate options. So if you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, you can email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. I think Tim has one more event for us.
Yes, I want to add one more event. Grace Restaurant, the local high-end vegan restaurant in Vancouver on Fraser Street, is hosting a fundraiser for the Wildlife Rescue Association of BC. Grace has been hosting a bunch of fundraisers recently, which I think is a pretty awesome initiative by them. And so if you go and mention when you make your reservation that you want to donate the money, then 20% of the cost of your dinner will be donated to Wildlife Rescue Association of BC, who provide care for more than 4,000 injured, orphaned, and pollution-damaged wild animals they receive each year.
Thank you for that. So today on our show, we have Leslie Fox of the Association for the Protection of Fur-Bearing Animals, otherwise known as Fur Bear Defenders. The Fur Bear Defenders are involved in finding nonviolent solutions to human-wildlife conflicts, as well as outreach and education on the horrors of the fur industry.
They work very hard over there. I'm sure Leslie's very busy. Their office is actually here in Vancouver. We're pretty lucky to have the headquarters of a national organization like this right here in town.
Yeah, they have one office in Vancouver and then one in Toronto as well. So yeah, it's good that they're making this news public in Canada, especially with our fur industry.
I think they've been active since
1944.
Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And they're the only organization in Canada devoted specifically to protecting fur-bearing animals. So they're quite a targeted group. So it's really great that we have someone looking out for that specific group of animals.
Mm-hmm.
I actually did some work for them previously, so excited to hear this update on how they're doing. Yeah, if you look on their website, you can see there's some photos of their merchandise. And yeah, I took the pictures of their swag, their t-shirts and stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, no problem. Alyssa, why don't you share some news stories with us in the meantime?
Sure, I can do that. Okay, so let's talk fur news. At the end of November, the only known fur farm in Colorado was raided, and all 200 mink were released. The Earth Liberation Front took responsibility for the raid. 3 days prior, there was an article in the local paper in Colorado there where residents had been complaining about the smell from a fur farm who had just relocated there. Activists took hints from the article to locate the farm, even though the address wasn't listed. After the raid, the fur farmer said he was getting out of the fur industry and couldn't afford to start again and keep fighting. So the Earth Liberation Front is counting this as a success. That farm is closed. The owner of the land wants to have another fur farm on that land, though that fur farmer is out of the business. But they still have sustained an estimated $250,000 of damage because the breeding records of the mink were destroyed, and they were planning on selling certain mink to Denmark. So that was big damage there. And the farm had said that 50 mink remained free. So a bunch were caught, but they're...
That's still amazing news, though, that they were able
and
to...
And final point, I wanted to mention that it was Animal Liberation Front Online. News said that there's been 9 raids in the last 4 months, and the numbers are more than, or about equal with what was happening in the 90s, but haven't been as high since then.
Wow. That's amazing.
That's the number of animals rescued, or...
No, 9 raids. So 9 fur farms have been raided in the last 4 months.
Yeah. I think we have Leslie on the line. Hello, Leslie. Thanks for joining us. Hi. So we finally got you. That's great. So can you start by sharing some of your recent successes and campaigns taking place this past year?
Absolutely. 2013 was a really, really busy year for us. Some of the highlights, I think, from this year include our victories with multiple municipalities in BC. So more specifically, the municipality of Surrey, Seashell on the Sunshine Coast, and Nanaimo on Vancouver Island. We had been working with them to pass trapping regulations or bylaws that would restrict the use of body gripping traps. So we're really excited about this initiative, and the reason why is because more and more municipalities are speaking out against trapping in favor of non-lethal options, and we're really driving those efforts. And we're hopeful that as more and more municipalities come on board, that there will be a tipping point, and we'll see some changes maybe at the provincial level. So this is something that's very, very positive, and hopefully we'll be able to transfer some of these successes to other provinces across Canada. In addition to our policy work and in our bylaws, we've been building a lot of flow devices. So one thing that we like to offer municipalities who are keen to move away from trapping is opportunities to learn how to construct non-lethal options such as beaver bafflers, beaver deceivers, pond levelers, and other flow devices that allow for beavers to stay in our areas but help control some of the activity that they like to make dams that sometimes can flood roadways and property. So lots of ways, though, that we can live with beavers, and we're happy to show municipalities some of the ways to do that. And then those things are, of course, addition to our regular work to speak out against the fur industry and animals that suffer both in confinement and in the wild.
Great. Thanks for sharing. And that kind of leads me into my next question about your Living with Wildlife campaign, which is hugely important in Canada, particularly in recent years where we seem to interact more urban wildlife. Could you provide some information on what, you know, what other things, I guess, or Fur Bearer Defenders does to protect our wildlife, primarily from human conflict?
Absolutely. So the two main species we find that are the ones to get in most conflict in urban areas are beavers and coyotes. And this is right across Canada. So many people don't know, but beavers are all over Canada. They're a national animal, and they're found right in many of our communities. And unfortunately, municipalities are just not equipped to handle beaver activity, which is one of the reasons why we like to engage them and help them build flow devices. The other animal are coyotes, who unfortunately get a terrible reputation through the media. They're vilified, and because of some, and again, it does happen, some incidents where coyotes can attack people's dogs or cats, and just leaves a very negative impression in the public. And it's really unfortunate, but coyotes do have a high prey drive, and cats and dogs are not their primary food source, but again, they do have a high prey drive and are opportunists, and unfortunately there's been some incidents there. But surely it's no reason, though, to vilify coyotes and want to kill them. So we work with quite a few communities, and education is always the cornerstone of any Living with Wildlife program. So teaching people about these animals, how they live, how to identify these animals, understand their behavior, and taking responsibility as homeowners is something that is really important. So encouraging communities to have good bylaws and programs and incentive programs, helping people ensure that their garbage is secure, that their compost and recycling boxes are secure and clean, not leaving fruit on the ground, and just kind of, you know, things like that we can do around our home that help control habitat and food sources that might bring these animals in close contact with us.
All right, great. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm familiar with Canada Goose's fur policy. So Canada Goose, for those of you that don't know, is a Canadian outdoor company known for its fur-trimmed parkas. And at times it can be infuriating when these falsities actually promote and encourage otherwise considerate people to purchase these fur products. Can you please discuss with us a few of the most persuasive arguments that Canada Goose makes in its fur policy and why these claims may be erroneous?
Absolutely. Canada Goose is a real pain in the butt. And I think here in Vancouver, it's not as prevalent as it is in other places like Toronto and Ottawa, Montreal. But Canada Goose makes all kinds of wacky claims, and certainly they're in bed with the fur industry, and they've definitely been working with the fur industry, so you'll see some commonalities in their arguments for fur. Canada Goose claims that animals killed for fur products, they're killed humanely, and which, of course, in our experience, it's far from the truth. Animals caught in the wild will break teeth and bones trying to escape from traps. Animals raised in confinement are deprived of any possible natural behavior, and they're stuck in these horrible wire cages, living in their own excrement for, years. And, these are things that we would never do to our own companion animals, and we just, again, believe that the term humane is just something that is certainly abused. Canada Goose also makes claims that, that we're somehow doing people a favor when we purchase fur, that fur it's a natural product, it's sustainable, it's eco-friendly, and that fur it contributes to the livelihood of Aboriginal people and First Nations groups that, you know, need these animals for their survival. And again, those statements are very emotionally charged. And of course, you know, we're not looking to put anyone out of work, and we understand that the fur industry does provide jobs to people, but we believe that, you know, with any other issue, we need to encourage job restructuring and training to get these people in places where, you know, their income is certainly more than they could ever make trapping, and that it's sustainable. And the fur industry it's a fashion-based industry, so fashion trends change and things fluctuate wildly. Also, we know that the number of Aboriginal trappers in Canada is it's very few and far between. The majority of trappers are they're white men. They trap as a hobby or a recreational activity for a few months out of the year. So it's hardly a livelihood. So, you know, and of course, Canada Goose likes to make the argument that fur is certainly warm and that it's water repellent and wind resistant and all these other things. And again, fur does have some amazing attributes. That's why animals are born with it, and it's what keeps them alive throughout their lifetime in our wilderness. But we believe that there's lots of products available on the market that perform just as well as fur, if not better, and that they're used all the time by scientists and researchers and explorers in remote areas all over the globe. So we just encourage people to make a kinder choice for animals.
Great, thank you so much. And another claim that they make that I always find kind of interesting is their claim that they never use endangered species. Mm-hmm. As far as I'm aware, traps, you know, they don't know what they're catching. They just catch whatever walks through their path. Right. So how are they able to make such a claim as that?
It's the devil's in the details. One of the things that's I'm glad you brought that up. One of the things that really interests me is, yes, they say on every piece of fur propaganda, we don't use endangered species. And it's actually true. They don't use endangered species, and they don't because that's the law. It is illegal to use endangered species. So they say it as if it's some kind of benefit or selling feature that they don't use endangered species. But again, it's a perfect example of greenwashing, because nobody can use endangered species. And you're right. The fact of the matter is, while they don't use endangered species, they certainly do kill them. And traps are non-discriminate. And any animal, dogs, cats, birds, and yes, endangered species, and even children for that matter, have all been documented to be found in traps. So it's something I think that definitely needs a critical eye. Anytime when we're talking about fur, we really need to think twice.
Great. And I recently saw, I think it was on your page, that Canada Goose sold majority stakes to Bain Capital, which is mm-hmm. an American company. And they claim, you know, that's one of their selling features, is that we are a Canadian company.
I know.
What can you tell us about that? What are your thoughts? And what more can we know about this?
Absolutely. That's a very interesting development, and that was just announced this week. So Canada Goose, certainly, one of their big marketing shticks is that it's a Canadian company, that the jackets are made in Canada. And there's a lot of debate about that and the textile regulations and all of the labeling issues. And there's a lot of kind of loopholes that allow for some wacky statements. And one of them is that made in Canada is a little bit of a loose term, and we know that Canada doesn't produce a lot of the textiles that go into making a Canada Goose jacket. It just doesn't happen here anymore. So, for example, some of the synthetic materials that are put into those coats, they just can't be found in Canada. So a better way to say it is the jackets are assembled in Canada, which is a lot different from saying made in Canada, which sort of conjures up this idea that it's all like homegrown Canadian when it's really not. But that was, you know, that's kind of their shtick, is Canadian made and blah, blah, blah. But yes, just this week there's a big announcement that Danny Reese, who's the big CEO of Canada Goose, sold the company to Bain Capital, who used to be owned by Mitt Romney, which is a real specimen. So Bain Capital now owns, which is a U.S.-based company, owns the majority of Canada Goose. So Canada Goose, in fact, is no longer Canadian. If there were any doubts before, there's certainly no doubt now that it's no longer Canadian. And Bain Capital has some, there's a lot of questions there in terms of business that they've done in the past and what the future holds for Canada Goose. Will they sell out to China? Will they continue to use real fur? Will they switch to synthetic? There are some concerns that we'll just move from cruelty to coyote to cruelty to raccoon dogs. I mean, even dog and cat fur is something that is found in China, and it's legal to import and sell dog and cat fur in Canada. So, you know, it's hard to say because things are still really early, but no doubt I think you can expect to see that the brand Canada Goose in a few years is going to be no big deal. And you'll probably find it in Walmart. And whether or not it'll have fur, what kind of fur, I mean, I think that'll remain to be seen. But Yeah, I think its days as this iconic Canadian outerwear company are coming to an end and quite quickly.
Well, hopefully that will deter some sales.
Oh, absolutely.
And that kind of leads, like, into, because they, like, their selling point is that we're Canadian, and so there's all these regulations on trapping. Can you share some details of what is still fully legal in Canada as far as trapping and fur farms go? Like, what are current regulations in Canada, and are they even monitored? How are they monitored?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a loaded question, and we would need like a weekend of airtime to go through everything, but I'll just quickly kind of skim the surface of some of the big points. I think the first one that comes to my mind is leg hold traps are still legal, and people we meet, and that's probably one of our biggest hurdles as an organization, is that people have this belief that leg hold traps were somehow banned in the 60s or 70s, and that's not true. Leg hold traps, just like shoes, come in a variety of shapes and sizes and styles and colors, and I mean, there's just an endless variety. And so what happened is in the 90s, the specific model of leg holds that have teeth, so the jagged edges that you might have seen on cartoons growing up or maybe on some photographs, those are prohibited in Canada. They are still legal in some U.S. states, but for the most part, that specific model has been phased out in favor of other styles of leg hold traps. And you can argue the merits on, you know, different kinds of leg holds, but in my opinion, they all work the same way. And they work by holding an animal who's fighting for his or her life that will be turned into a coder for trim. And in our opinion, they were, you know, regardless of the style or, you know, whatever, again, the intention is always the same, and that's to kill the animals. So leg hold traps are legal. In BC, a couple of examples, under the law, it's legal to set a trap 200 meters from a dwelling. So laws are provincial, and again, a lot of people think that trapping happens up north in the middle of nowhere, and that's couldn't be further from the truth. It's happening right here in the Lower Mainland. A lot of municipalities trap, it's closer to home than people think it is. No warning signs are required when there's trapping, and those are, I think, some of the big ones for trapping that I can think of that people probably be surprised. In terms of fur farms, it's really sad. I would say fur farms probably have less regulations than trapping does, actually. So in Canada, the only province I'm aware of that has any laws related to standards on fur farms would be Nova Scotia. And even that, they're really minimal, and they don't do anything for animal welfare. It's a lot is just related to some of the environmental concerns that have come out of Nova Scotia because of all the pollution related to their production of mink. So Nova Scotia produces by far the largest amount of mink in Canada. It's over 2 million in that tiny province, and their waterways are absolutely polluted because of it. So for that reason, there's been some laws come out of Nova Scotia. But again, there's a lot of loopholes and criticism that those laws don't go far enough. Across Canada, in terms of fur farms, you'll find on the books, and in BC, I'm just thinking of, is I think there's a paragraph. There's something called the Fur Farm Act, and it's literally a paragraph, a few sentences, and basically all it says is that you have to get a permit and some licensing. But that's it. Like, there's no information related to how the animals, there's no law related to, you know, how the animals need to be cared for, you know, minimum or maximum cage sizes or anything to do with welfare considerations, like let alone rights. So that's certainly concerning. The industry will argue that it's heavily regulated, and one of the things we'll talk about is that Agriculture Canada publishes recommendations for caged fox and caged mink. But what's important to know about those regulations is that they're guidelines. They're completely voluntary. So in our opinion, those aren't laws at all. It's just somebody making some suggestions of how you should treat your animals and how you should kill them. And whether or not anyone takes that seriously and who is enforcing it, I mean, that's a whole other issue. And enforcement, even with laws that do exist, you know, you just look at the conservation officers here in the province. I mean, the cutbacks alone have made it really impossible to have any effective or meaningful enforcement, and just even we'll look at just even animal cruelty legislation, how far behind we are with that for just cats and dogs.
Absolutely.
So it's still a long way to go.
Yeah. And I'd also like to mention, too, I'm not sure, I didn't hear you mention it, but as far as traps go, I think in BC, the law is that they can leave the traps for 3 days. And so the animal can be suffering in a trap for 3 days. And, you know, who knows if people are even following these regulations.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So mm-hmm. Which I find such an arbitrary thing, it's called trap check times. So under trapping regulations in the province, so for what they call restraining traps, which would be like hold traps, you're supposed to check them in 72 hours. But if it's a kill trap, you're supposed to check it in 14 days. But the thing that I always wonder about, and we've looked into it, we've done Freedom of Information requests trying to get a sense of how many tickets or violations have been handed out for trap check times, and there's none. There's no way to enforce it because there's nobody recording the point of entry, the time of entry. No one has a stopwatch that's standing there. Like, it's just this arbitrary thing, I think, to make people feel good and make people think that the government's really looking out for our animals when they're not.
Yeah. And just to finish off, what can people do to help the fur-bearing animals of Canada and abroad?
Well, the most easiest one is certainly not to buy fur. You know, it sounds kind of like a no-brainer, but when we say that, what we're talking about is, I think people have it in their heads that, oh, you know, fur, I never buy fur. But you might be surprised in some of the places where you'll find fur. And some examples would be pet toys. So I know a lot of activists myself who, oh, you know, we're against fur. And then they have these little mice at home that are made from rabbit fur that's dyed pink that they bought at the pet store. And they just didn't know, you know, that there's no labels. And, you know, a lot of people think it could be fake fur. And, you know, it's only a few dollars, so it can't possibly be real fur. But, you know, lo and behold, it is. Cell phone cases, socks, earrings. You know, you can find fur on eyelash extensions.
Wow.
Some of them are made from mink. Makeup brushes, you know, if you're using like blush or like a foundation powder and you have your brushes at home for cosmetics, they can also be sourced from animal hair. So, you know, we really need to be careful as consumers. And I would argue, I would probably avoid fake fur. I know there's a lot of groups that really make an effort to promote fake fur, but in our opinion, it's really done a disservice to animals, and fake fur can look real. Real fur can look fake. There's been companies, including Winners, The Bay, and Sears, that have been found advertising fake fur when it's actually real. And in our opinion, it just perpetuates the whole problem. That fur is back, and it's confusing to consumers. And I would just totally stay away from it. The second thing I think that people should do is write letters. I know it sounds super boring, but letters to MP, letters to the Minister of Forest Lands and Natural Resources, letters to the Minister of the Environment, engaging your local city council, it really does make a difference. It's long-term, and it can be kind of annoying, but it is really important. We need to change policy just as much as we're changing consumer habits. And I think speaking out is essential.
Great. Thank you so much, Leslie. We're out of time for today, but thanks so much for joining us and giving all that information. And so I would just recommend that people, you know, contact Fur Bear Defenders to get more information to hopefully, you know, do their own outreach.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So that was Leslie Fox, of Executive Director of Fur Bear Defenders. For more information on this great organization and how to help, please check out furbeardefenders.com. And I also recommend you check out the Fur Trim is a Trap page, which includes a lot of information disproving all of Canada Goose's claims, along with many other commonly perpetuated fur industry myths. FurTrimIsATrap.com.
You are listening to 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver's co-op radio, broadcasting live from the downtown east side on unceded Coast Salish territories. My name's Alyssa, and I have some quick news items for you. First, in further fur news, there was, West Hollywood, you may have heard, the city council there decided to ban the sale of fur as, like, fashion fur, and it was enacted actually just in November of this year. Now, a retailer has sued West Hollywood over a ban on fur apparel sales. Mayfair House, a specialty clothing and accessory store on Beverly Boulevard, said the city has overstepped its authority. The retailer claims the ban violates the state and U.S. constitutions. The ban applies to shoes, hats, and gloves. It also includes sheepskin or lambskin shearling, such as that used on the popular UGG boots. And retailers can be charged with a misdemeanor if they're cited more than 3 times for continuing to sell these kinds of items in stores. So that's exciting. I'd love to learn more details on what led up to the city council deciding to ban that.
Yeah.
So Mayfair House is basically saying that the city can only control, like, wild animal use. And I think they're saying animals used in fur aren't wild because they're born in cages. I think that's what they're arguing anyway. I just looked at headlines today. I saw that in the U.S., there's National Green Chemistry Awards funded by the Environmental Protection Agency. And one of the winners was a breathable vegan leather. Of course, the tanning process for animal skins involves a lot of toxic chemicals, not to mention suffering and injustice. So this seems to be good news that something like this is making headlines.
That's great.
In other, just a little vegan little news, there was the World Memory Championships, and there was a man from Sweden named Jonas von Essen. He became the World Memory Champion with the highest score on record, and he is a vegan. So I just wanted to share that. And then looking at blackfish and orcas and cetaceans in captivity and the fallout from that amazing documentary, there's now Trisha Yearwood is the most recent musician to cancel her show there next year. Apparently, she hasn't even seen the movie, but she's following on the heels of Cheap Trick, Heart, Willie Nelson, the Bare Naked Ladies. They've all, I guess, seen the film and canceled their shows, and Trisha Yearwood is the fifth to do that.
There's a lot of campaigns online, actually, like petitions. That's how the Bare Naked Ladies chose to cancel their show, because just of all the bad press they were receiving from fans.
I think it's really powerful, too, because when celebrities start disagreeing with something, you know, they're disagreeing with SeaWorld, the public tends to follow, so hopefully that happens.
Or even if they don't disagree, they don't want to be in support
exactly.
of it.
Exactly, they don't want to support it, yeah.
All right, so that's it for the news. And now moving on. There was a recent poll of British Columbia residents, of 704 of them to be exact. It was a for and against, all about different kinds of animal issues. And specifically, just wanted to focus on the fur numbers. So people for killing animals for fur, 15%. And this past week, Jackie and I ventured out into the wild world to gather some opinions from the other 85%. There's some different opinions there. I don't share all of them, but we wanted to just hear what people thought. And so we asked people, what do you think about wearing fur? And we invite you now to call us at the station directly live, because we want to talk to you after we share these opinions. The number here is 604-684-7561. We'd love to hear what you think about anything you've heard on the show today, or about what these people on the streets had to say about fur.
I think there's a place for wearing fur, but I don't think it's really good in the commercial market so much. But there definitely is a place for it, and there's a history, and I think that has to be considered.
I'm okay with people wearing fur if it is, like, there's animals that are used for, like, meat, and then instead of, like, throwing out the extra stuff, it's used for, like, boots or something like that, so I'm totally okay with that. I'm not okay with, like, killing animals in order to make something, but if you're using the whole animal, then I'm okay with that.
I've never been one to buy fur for fashion. One, because I can't afford it. And two, because I just don't feel like there is a need for that.
My sister's been a vegetarian, so it's kind of like in my family. So, I don't know, for me, I wouldn't wear it, but if I see it on someone else, like, I can't really do anything about it. For other people, it's okay.
I feel we've progressed beyond that. It certainly isn't needed to keep us warm anymore, and if people only knew how it comes to become a coat, I'm sure they wouldn't buy anything with fur on it. And if they knew that cats and dogs in China are being used for fur and it's not properly labeled, I'm sure they would stop. So it's just, I mean, times have changed. We don't need to wear fur anymore.
But I'm asking people about their opinions about fur. So fur for fashion.
Ew.
Why?
Because they're living animals.
Have you ever worn fur? Or do you have anything that's fur?
Fake?
Is it fake?
Yeah.
We see not as many fur coats, but a lot of fur trim. And we're just wondering what people think about that.
Is it real fur, actually? Most of the things I see are faux fur, so I didn't know they were real. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they shouldn't kill animals to get the fur, but if the animal is already dead, then they can use the fur for the coats. But if it's like something that's really rampant and everyone is using that kind of fur coat, then I guess they're killing animals to get it right.
So, you said you love fur. Tell us about that.
I love fur. I'll get pelts, I'll go to secondhand stores, anything. It's in. And I won't buy anything new. You know, I'm not going to support that because I do believe in, like, animal, like, fairness and well-being. But if it's secondhand, oh, God, I will go all out.
Do you have any idea what kind of animal that is?
I don't. Maybe coyote? Like
really?
This is $10 filled with down. That's another thing. Feathers.
Yeah.
Feathers, fur, anything like that.
Why do you like that stuff?
Because it's natural and it's nature and it's warm.
Do you think that it's environmentally friendly to wear fur?
If you're doing it like secondhand, you know, like not, you know.
For the process of it?
No. Unfortunately, yeah. You know, like I don't really want to think about how it came to be on my body, but if it's there and it's recycled and reused, then I have no problem with it.
Do you know at all how animals for fur are raised in Canada or where they come from?
No, I have no idea, but I know that there's a lot of things that get said that certain conditions are this way. Same with, like, chicken farms that do eggs. They're like, it's this way, but not every farm is that way, right? There's some farms that obviously don't go by standards, and so then they give a bad name to everyone else.
Do you have any idea about the Canadian fur industry, like, say, farms versus wild trapping?
No,
like,
idea.
Do you have any idea what percentage might come from farms versus wild?
No idea, no.
So actually, it's 75% of fur made in Canada is farmed animals. So they are mink and foxes. And minks are, you know, they're partially aquatic animals, and they are kept in cages, so they don't have any access to water, which can be very detrimental to them.
Right.
And they are either, like, gassed with carbon monoxide, or they are anally and vaginally electrocuted. And then the other 25%-ish is trapped in a lake hole trap like that, or like a conibear trap, and they are either clubbed to death or shot.
It is too bad, because I grew up on the farm.
Yeah.
Back and I knew a little bit. Every creature deserves a decent life, even animals, even ants.
I mean, it makes it seem like unfair to the animals, but I don't know what they can do about it, really. Maybe they can create some laws that protect the animals.
Have you learned anything today, or will you think of fur differently?
I've been making changes recently to my diet, and although I've never bought fur, I mean, I'll start, you know, telling more people about the animal industry and how that is being manufactured and processed.
So that was myself, Alyssa, and Jackie asking people their opinions on fur and talking about the Canadian fur industry.
And as you could tell, that was partially at a very noisy SkyTrain station.
I don't think we'll do that again, but we're learning.
Yeah. I think it worked well. Like, next time, just get a better microphone. But I think everybody could hear everything. Yeah.
And it's nice to go outside of the studio. It was a good way to get some opinions from people. Yeah, really interact with the public.
So yeah, if any of our listeners have opinions on what they just heard or the fur industry in general, just give us a call, 604-684-7561. We only have a couple minutes.
So or shoot us an email
if it's
after the show at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We'd love to chat with you. I thought there was some interesting opinions in there. Mm-hmm. I think one that stood out to me was some fur farms might make the other ones look bad or something, as if you could have a humane fur farm when it's just for fashion. How is that humane?
Well, she even made the connection to chickens or hens being used in egg farms and how some of them are bad and some of them are humane. But it's something that we talk about a bit here on Animal Voices, the humane myth in general. And I believe that, like Leslie said earlier, you know, there's not really any regulations on the fur farm. So why would they try to make it humane?
Yeah, I think with any farm or any enterprise, some are going to be better than others. Some try a little harder than others, but the facts are still there. The injustice is still there. We have no right to their bodies. They're not our property. So, yeah.
I found it interesting that several people mentioned they found it okay to use the fur if the animal was already dead. Or like this notion of using the whole animal, and you have this in the restaurant industry a lot, that people are like, oh, well, we are eating the whole animal and not just like some bits, so we're respecting it, which is, I find it a bit of a weird notion. But more so with fur, I'm wondering, like, where do people think they find, like, dead dogs and cats? Like, it's not that they are raised for meat, at least not in these regions. So they are just killed for fur, right?
I didn't really think about actually how the animals were treated, and I think that was one of the most shocking things to me. It wasn't how they were killed, but how they lived their lives. But Joanne MacArthur on her website, We Animals, has some really great photos that she took undercover. She actually visited a fur farm in Europe and was able to take pictures of how these animals live their everyday lives, which is pretty shocking to me. But another piece I found interesting was Joshua Katcher of The Brave Gentleman. He's a fashionista designer from New York City. He went on the street and did a similar piece with a little bit more, shall I say, sass when he was interviewing people and showing them some videos and stuff. So you can check that out on YouTube, and we'll post it on our Facebook page.
It's posted on our webpage as well for this episode.
It's the discerning brute.
Yes.
Is it not?
Yes. He's very connected to the fashion community.
Okay.
Okay, well, this was Animal Voices today on 100.5 FM CFO Vancouver Co-op Radio on unceded Coast Salish territories in British Columbia. We are very keen to hear your comments and your suggestions, so please visit our website, animalvoices.org, or our Facebook page, Animal Voices.
Next week's show, we're going to be having some Christmas holiday episode information to prepare you for this holiday break and everything you might be celebrating, be it Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or solstice or break time. That's my favorite celebration. And we'll be unveiling our yearly Animal Voices song, Jingle Bells, Compassion, Smells. We'll see what it's going to be. Tune in next week for that.
Okay, and we'll leave you now with Don't Kill the Animals by Nina Hagen and Lena Lovitch, and stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Remember to be kind to the animals.
mystery. The quest for knowledge is a mystery.